Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. By Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I am David Chen, and I fully expect Michael Myers to show up randomly in this podcast speaking in a British accent. Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Finally, a prequel to the TV show New Amsterdam.
And Jeff Cannata.
Today we're going to talk about three people who make a friendship pact that will last forever. But enough about the film cast.
Nicely done. Those are, of course, all vague, oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing Amsterdam, the new film that's out in theaters right now with a loaded cast starring everyone in Hollywood and Taylor Swift. So a lot to dive into there. You can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. You can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can sign up for ad-free episodes and exclusive After Darks. This week on the After Dark, we're going to be diving into the Netflix movie Athena. Incredible movie, lots to dive into there. And that's going to be one of the topics on this week's episode of the Filmcast After Dark. You can sign up to receive that episode at patreon.com/filmpodcast. But before we get into any of that, I need to read what, in my opinion, is one of the greatest emails we've ever received in the history of this podcast.
This email gives me agita, just so you know.
This email comes from Kyle from Anaheim, California. Subject line of the email. Kyle writes to slashfilmcast@gmail.com, Jeff's mousetrap mix-up is ruining my marriage and friendships. Already one of the greatest email subject lines of all time. Right, so I'm instantly hooked based off of that email subject line. Kyle writes in, gentlemen. Oh, and actually, we should provide some backup, some background for this this email. Right, several episodes of the Filmcast ago, Jeff Cannata talked about the whodunit that's playing right now in theaters called See How They Run. See How They Run in the movie heavily features a play written by Agatha Christie called The Mousetrap. And Jeff Cannata, in that conversation of the podcast, you said, hey, before you see the movie See How They Run, you got to watch the movie version of the play, The Mousetrap, right? That's what you said on that podcast, correct?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. Okay. I said it would benefit you to have the mousetrap.
Yeah, you gotta have the full context for
it.
The
would benefit you to have it fresh in your mind, and so you should seek out. So
you should definitely see the movie version of the play, which Jeff Cannata, which A is a thing that definitely exists, and B is a thing that Jeff Cannata definitely has watched. Right? is a thing that
I didn't say I watched it recently.
No.
I just said
even in our reality, potentially. You know, you didn't say you watched it in this version of the multiverse.
No.
But it was then subsequently pointed out that, of course, there is no filmed version of The Mousetrap. And actually, that's a major plot point in the movie See How They Run.
Well, yes, but yes. It's not like the movie tells you there's not one now.
Right. It's not like we're taking the movie's word as gospel or anything like that, right? Okay. So that's the background you need for this email is Jeff said, see The Mousetrap movie before you see How They Run. And also, there is no Mousetrap movie. That's the context, okay?
Two data points.
Yeah, okay. Kyle writes into slashfilmcast@gmail.com, quote, I regret to inform the three of you that Jeff's mousetrap mix-up has had a measurable real-world impact on my life and closest relationships. My husband and I have a ritual with another close married couple whereby every other week we trade off planning duties for a Friday night hangout. Last Friday, it was the other couple's turn to plan the night, and we were informed via our group text thread that the plan was to go catch the new film, See How They Run. One of the implied edicts of this friendly arrangement is that we generally agree to do whatever the planning couple is proposing, even if it's not something that would be on the top of our own list that we'd be considered, that might be considered a fun Friday night. Fortunately, though, we're all movie fans, so films are usually a safe bet. But Jeff's adamance that audiences needed to see the 1960s classic film The Mousetrap first caused me to break our group's cardinal rule and step in to say that the planned movie outing would be a non-starter. I felt a bit uncomfortable putting my foot down in such a way, but I felt confident that seeing the films in order would make for a more enjoyable experience all around. I noted that this commandment was coming straight from one of my very trusted film sources, the Filmcast, and even referenced a positive personal anecdote from a few years back with our group, where seeing Citizen Kane before watching Mank really helped us appreciate both films. Since neither of our houses were clean enough to have a movie night that Friday, the plans changed instead to grabbing burgers at a brand new fancy burger restaurant that opened in the neighborhood. We had a great night, and the food was delicious until later that night when, back at our respective homes, all four of us experienced a grisly bout of what we later determined was likely food poisoning. I'll spare you the details, but the book that HBO's House of the Dragon is based upon, Fire and Blood, comes to mind for some reason.
I can't be responsible for the food poisoning, you guys.
Needless to say, Saturday was pretty much a blur for the four of us, and on Sunday, nausea was replaced with guilt and recriminations, as our friends wanted to blame themselves for taking us to the burger joint, while my husband was content with just blaming me for upending the original plan to see how they run. Even now, things are a little uncomfortable between the four of us. But where things get really fucked is right about now, as I'm writing this email on Tuesday, having just listened to the opening bits of your Avatar film episode, and now realizing that not only has the Friday night Mousetrap home watch party idea that I was planning gone up in smoke, but that the entire justification behind last week's plan change was a total farce. I honestly don't know what I'm going to do this Friday, as I'm terrified of what my friends might think of me when they realize my towering folly, to say nothing of how incandescent my husband might get when he finds out the truth. More like, see how I run.
They'll never know. They will never know.
It's more like, see how they got the runs, right?
My only hope is that I can plan something so fun and so distracting that all thoughts of the films and the food poisoning fall by the wayside. Given that Disneyland is literally just down the road, I think I might suggest we all go in on season passes and hope that we can cycle through a few Fridays at the theme park until See How They Run ends its theatrical run and is hopefully forgotten about. In my dim recollections of the fog of last Saturday, one line from my husband as he gripped the toilet bowl echoes in my mind. I hope that old Agatha Christie flick is worth it. I wish I could say it will be worth it, but it doesn't even exist. End quote. That email comes from Kyle from Anaheim, California. And I love this email for many, many reasons. I mean, it's a really well-written email. But also, it's really about the butterfly. Another thing that I love about the email is it shows the importance of accuracy on the podcast, right? Like, if we get something wrong, friendships are at stake. Marriages are at stake with the stuff that we talk about on the podcast.
I can't handle that kind of pressure, Dave.
Well, I can, Jeff. And I'd suggest you get on board, okay? But the other thing is also the butterfly effect of Jeff makes a royally fucks up on the podcast by alluding to a movie that doesn't exist. And then next thing you know, like, we've completely thrown a bomb into what seems to be a really healthy adult friendship between these two couples. And I don't know if you guys feel this way, but adult friendships, especially like couple friendships, are hard to come by. They don't grow on trees. You don't just walk down the street and pick them off the side of the street, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard. And it appears that this little group has been going for years. He says, literally from a few years back, seeing Citizen Kane and watching Mac. So they've been running this friend group for years, which is like, wow, that is an accomplishment, gentlemen.
Yeah.
That is an accomplishment. In walks Jeff Cannata like a fucking bull in a china shop with his inaccurate Agatha Christie movie knowledge. And next thing you know, this friend group is like, and you can totally imagine what this would be like, where you say a thing, everyone suffers because of it, like, in second order impact, right?
Yeah.
And then it's weird between you. Like, you kind of like don't trust each other anymore. You know what I'm saying? I can totally understand this.
You are loving this so much, David.
Am I?
Yeah. Now, okay. So, yeah.
Jeff, what say you?
In my defense.
Yes.
First of all, the revelation of my misdeed took place in the Avatar episode. And I would submit that's not even the primary reason that episode made people projectile vomit. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, your mileage may vary on your level of nausea in any given episode of the film cast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Secondly, I feel like my stance seeing this non-existent film has been a bit exaggerated. I believe all I said was, I wish mm-hmm. I had revisited the movie before watching it, not knowing that there wasn't a movie. And oh my gosh, so many people. So I can't even tell you how many people have speculated as to what movie I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm,
most
mm-hmm,
people have. Yeah. There seems to be I can't think of the word. An agreement. What's the word for agreeing on something?
Pact?
No. Consensus.
Contract?
Consensus.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
there seems to be a consensus that the movie that I substituted in my head was Death Trap, which is the old Michael Caine, Christopher Reeve, fantastic movie. But I do believe that's probably what happened, is that I was remembering seeing the title of Death Trap and knowing I had seen Death Trap, and just kind of, you know, substituted that in my head as Mousetrap. Anyway. I was saying, I wish I had revisited. I wasn't saying, hey, restructure your life. Go to, you know, the Salmonella Hut and get burgers. I wasn't suggesting any of that.
Really? I distinctly remember the word Salmonella Hut being spoken on that episode, Jeff.
That was a completely different context. That was that's one of the names of one of the characters from Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think that's fair. But people just want to trust you so much. Like, they trust you implicitly, Jeff. You know what I mean?
Hey, in all seriousness, I do value that. And every attempt is usually, well, not every attempt. You know, majority of the time, we endeavor to be accurate. Mm-hmm. And we also endeavor to correct our mistakes as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the podcast only comes out once a week. So that's as quickly as we can rectify the situation.
Yes, yes, yes. Well,
but I do take that responsibility seriously, as do I think all three of us, in trying to present accurate information or you know, respect the audience. Excuse mm-hmm. me, respect the audience's time. Respect your desire to have the best possible film going experience, and our you know, job in assisting that, in facilitating that to some degree. I do think we take that seriously, and I apologize profusely to everybody's buttholes that had to, you know, do the diarrhea that night.
I feel like maybe we should have breaking news alerts or something, like on our Twitter, like, hey, no, that movie doesn't exist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, just like a 15-second drop in your RSS feed of Dave going, yeah, Jeff messed up again, everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Could be a new ongoing segment. Jeff messed up, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I was curious. Like, have you ever been in a situation where somebody in the situation, like in a social situation, has messed up so royally that it made everything really awkward for a while afterwards? I have an example that comes to mind. Okay. This is very silly. Now that I'm saying it, it's going to sound silly, and you guys will make fun of me for it. But that's okay. That's the point of it. I'm not even gonna say when this happened. Okay, I'm just gonna be very vague about it. But I was a part of an a cappella group, okay? And we were competing in an a cappella competition.
The B sharps?
We were competing in an a cappella competition, and the a cappella competition had extremely strict rules. right, for the timing of how long each performance could be. I think it was something like every group got 10 minutes, or it was like 10 or 15 minutes, and they timed it very strictly, and you could not go over. Or you would get docked points. And I remember the head of the group made a last minute change. He's like, hey, we were going to do like two songs, but then he's like, no, you know, we should totally do three songs. And everyone in the group was like, hey, are you sure? Like, we should do three songs, because like,
they have these extremely there, buddy. Yeah.
They have these extremely strict rules that we can't go over like 10 minutes or whatever. And he's like, guys, I timed it. It's fine. It's going to be fine. So we're like, okay, you know, and we trusted this person, and we all get up on stage and we perform the three songs, and we went over the time. And literally, as they're announcing the winners of the contest later on, they announced the runner up, and they basically said, oh, this one was really hard to, it was really hard to figure out who the runner up was, because unfortunately the runner up, due to timing reasons, was ex a cappella group that we were in. And so it was very clear that we would have been number one if it wasn't for the timing. Like, we'd gone over, been docked some points, we came in second place. And literally, like, the next rehearsal we had, everyone, like, the atmosphere was like very, very not kind. You know, people were really, really unhappy with the leader of the group. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The opposite of a cappella mood, you know?
And I was just like, oh yeah, that was, I remember being like really, really upset at the time that this person had made this. We had all said, don't do this thing that you shouldn't do. And then he's like, let's do it. And then we lost because of it. You know what I mean? For some reason, when I think of like really awkward social situations caused by one person, that's one that came to mind.
Dave, were you the person?
And that leader grew up to be David Chen. No, it wasn't. It wasn't me. But it was like. But it was. Like, it was a weird thing, because like the guy was really like, I don't understand. Like, why is everyone? You know, I made a call. It was a mistake. Like, let's move on. And but it realized, like, here's what I did realize is like, there was no social mechanism by which to air people's grievances. Do you know what I mean? Like. Mm-hmm. There's no like, hey, let's all sit down and like talk about our feelings about that. Like, that doesn't happen. It's an all guy. It was an all guys a cappella group, you know.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff like didn't really happen, and so as a result, people just kind of like bottled up the resentment and didn't say anything. And then it came out, like people like lashed out in weird and different ways.
Well, here's the question though: if you had only done the two songs, would you have been first place?
I think that third song
was the one that really impressed everybody.
Nah, I think the first two songs were pretty impressive too. So, so I think, but it's like, yeah, there's no, you know, and same thing with this group of people too, is like clearly there's like bitterness and anger and recriminations about the situation, but there's no like necessarily like, hey, let's all have like a group therapy session where we like talk about it. Cause that'd be like weird in our modern day society, you know, to like talk about your feelings like that.
Yeah.
Which I think is a real loss. You know, I think it's a real shame that we can't really, it's not really like socially accepted to kind of, hey, I'm upset about this and we need to talk about it.
Did they ever address it, or were they just like, let's move on?
Well, yeah, that's the open question.
Yeah.
Kyle, if you are listening to this, we require an update on how and see how they run.
Well,
and
I'm
whether
talking
you
about your music group too.
Oh, on the music group. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Basically like one of the sort of senior people in the music group, we basically hashed it out over email, right? Like the head of the group sent an email. It was like, hey, like, why is everyone treating me like chopped liver now? And one of the other people in the group emailed and was like, hey, dude, the reason everyone's upset is because you freaking tanked, you know, our performance by making the wrong call, even after we all warned you not to. And after he said that email, we basically didn't talk about it again. Because it's like,
great.
The airing of grievances has occurred. You know, like it's out of
great
the open.
Leadership. Yeah,
you know, like we don't need to like reflect that anymore. Because it's like they just needed to know that it made an impression, like that the leader of the group knew that we felt wronged by him somehow. And then like that's it. That's all you need, right?
Feels like a real sliding doors moment, Dave. Your whole career could have been shot into a completely different direction if you had just won the tournament, become, you know. Top tier a cappella group, and then who knows, next stop, stardom.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would have left this one horse podcast behind a long time ago.
I think it's a money horse, Dave.
I have a quick one if you want.
Hit us, Jeff.
If we want to beat this dead horse, money horse.
Please.
I really shouldn't tell the story, but I'm going to anyway. It's not that bad. Several years ago, it was way, way, way before COVID, group of friends getting together in a similar to our emailer, like, you know, friend groups, couples, getting together to play board games. So as I often do, I often force my friends to play my designer board games that I'm obsessed with. And we got together, several couples, and it was a team game. And there was a moment toward the end where one of my friend's girlfriends did a thing that completely threw the game, completely, like, just absolutely lost the game for her team. And as she was doing it, everyone saw that it was the worst possible thing you could do in the context of the game in that moment. And it was clear to me, and I believe everyone, that the reason that she did it is because she just misunderstood the rules. She just misunderstood what it would accomplish, right? That particular act in the game, it was clear that she just didn't understand what was about to happen, right? And everybody was like, no, don't. And then she's like, no, I want to do it. And okay, well, it's your choice to do it. And it was catastrophic for her team, right? And, you know, small stakes, just playing a board game. But everybody afterwards was like, why did you do that? That we just lost the game. We didn't need to. You didn't have to do that. And she clearly embarrassed, it seems, of that, or coming to the realization that she just misunderstood the rules. This is my interpretation of what happened, is that she realized that she made a catastrophic error and didn't want to admit to that. So she started to say, no, I did that on purpose because I thought it would be funny, which is far worse.
Yeah.
Far, far, far worse than, oops, I misunderstood. But she did not want to admit that she misunderstood. And so instead said, hey, no, I was completely intentional. I did that because I thought it would be funny and fun for everyone. And it was fun for zero people. The people who won the game did not enjoy winning for that reason. And the people who lost the game felt like someone in their team just stabbed them in the back. And it was the last time we ever played board games.
It was
such small stakes. This is not projectile vomiting or uncontrollable diarrhea. This is so, it just literally, but it soured everyone to such an extent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is these like adult connections are very tenuous.
I think,
you know, it's just like, takes a little tiny thing to like upset it, and then it's over.
I don't want to spend hours of my life doing something to have someone just ruin it at the end. Like, I got better things to do with my time. You know?
Right. Yeah. Anyway. Well, anyway, Kyle, deep apologies from the podcast.
Yeah. I really screwed the pooch on that one. Sorry.
But we hope you're able to redeem the situation, and do give us an update when you have a chance, and hope that everyone is healing up nicely from the food poisoning. And of course, you can always write into slashfoomcast@gmail.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with what we've been watching and then our review of Amsterdam. All right, folks, let's get to what we've been watching this week. You can always use #/tag to share stuff that you want us to watch. And sometimes we end up watching it and makes it part of the show. Okay. I want to talk about a few things I've been watching. I watched the movie Smile. I did not know, guys, that, you know, we try our best to predict what people are going to be interested in, what they're going to be talking about. Obviously, if I had known this movie would be a massive success, and not the movie that starred literally every actor in Hollywood, I would have advocated we review this movie instead. But this movie has a budget of $17 million and has already made almost $100 million worldwide. It is a phenomenon right now at the box office.
And if you want to hear the incredible story of the circumstances around which Dave saw Smile, then you got to tune in to the After Dark from last week because it's a doozy.
Totally, totally. And also, we put a clip of it, a clip of the After Dark on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/filmcast. So check that out as well. But Smile, I will read the plot summary from IMDb. Here's the plot summary of Smile. If you don't want to hear the plot summary of Smile, tune out for a second. After witnessing a bizarre traumatic incident involving a patient, Dr. Rose Carter starts experiencing frightening occurrences that she can't explain. Rose must confront her troubling past in order to survive and escape her horrifying new reality, end quote. What's really impressive about this movie is it stars Sosie Bacon, who is Kevin Bacon and Kyra Sedgwick's daughter, and she's the lead of the movie, and I had not seen her in anything before. I don't know if you guys had seen her. I think she was in like Mare of Easttown. She's in 13 Reasons Why, but this was the first thing I...
You can still get 6 degrees from her to anybody. That's my understanding.
Yeah, that's my... Yes. Maybe it's 7 degrees to her, I believe. But in any case, she is incredible in this movie. Like, she has to basically carry the whole film. And she's in almost every single scene. And I think she's really impressive. It's worth watching just to kind of see her performance as she kind of slowly loses it and becomes more unhinged throughout the course of the film. But the movie plot itself is kind of this mix between It Follows and The Ring and kind of similar visuals and concepts to those movies. And those aren't bad movies to be cribbing from. I really had a great time with Smile. I thought it had some really memorable visuals. The visual that is on the poster that's in the trailers is kind of this idea of basically people smiling as terrible things are happening, right? Smiling as, you know, horrible things are... I'm trying not to spoil anything, but like basically like terrible things are occurring, but they're smiling through it, and there's something that's causing them to do that. And it's really a creepy, effective visual, and there's a lot of neat visual ideas in the movie. I would say, you know, this comes hot on the heels of another horror movie that's been a kind of surprise hit, Barbarian, right? We talked about that movie. Smile is... we talked about that movie on the Filmcast After Dark. Smile is a much more kind of conventional supernatural horror film. I might argue that the scares, the jump scares, the imagery feels a little bit more effective, a little bit more scary in Smile than it did in Barbarian, personally. But Barbarian is a more interesting, unique plot. You know, like, very few movies are structured like how Barbarian is structured. Smile is pretty conventional when it comes to horror film. It's just a really, really well-executed horror film, if that makes sense. So I think it's worth checking out. If you like horror movies and you like the marketing for this movie, I think you're going to like the movie itself. And it's worth it just, again, to see Sosie Bacon's performance. But the movie is Smile. It's out in theaters. And you should go watch it. So is this something that's hit your radar? Devendra, I know you've been a fan of the marketing of this movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's a good concept. I do love like a good horror movie concept like this, because smiling can be weird. Somebody's just smiling for no reason. That's creepy.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. And it makes for some really memorable like posters and visuals as well. So it's a neat gimmick. And this movie dropped like something like 20 to 25% in its second weekend. That is the best second weekend hold for any R-rated horror film other than Jordan Peele's Get Out. So, like, I think the word of mouth on this movie is really, really hot. And people are just seeing it. They're getting scared that the hell scared out of them. They're telling all their friends to see it. And I'm joining the chorus. Check it out. It's worth watching and getting scared at. So that's Smile. It's available right now in theaters. I had a chance to check out Werewolf by Night, the new movie by composer and now director Michael Giacchino. Of course, Giacchino has directed short films before. This is his first feature film. It is a Marvel special presentation that is about 1 hour long, streaming right now on Disney Plus. Takes place in the MCU, but is very, very different than any other Marvel show. And it's an homage to old school monster movies. Jeff Cannata, you had a chance to watch this as well, Werewolf by Night on Disney Plus. Yes. What did you think of it?
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I did like it. I thought it was fun, interesting. It's basically, the first, most of the movie is Fortnite. You know, it's if you like Fortnite or it's basically a battle royale. It's monster hunters fighting each other and a monster looking for weapons. You know, it's basically it's like, oh, what if Fortnite, but real. There is enough here to have some fun. I liked stylistically it is presented in black and white. There is film grain and sort of flaws added to the image to make it seem like one of those old movies that I grew up, you know, you'll see them come on TV late at night. I don't know if kids have that experience anymore. Probably not. Everything's on demand now. So you're not just, you know, we grew up where you would see something you didn't expect to see. I don't think people watch anything they don't expect to watch anymore. But that's kind of how this movie felt to me, as those old, like, what even is this? It's on late at night on some weird channel. And I like that about it. It is also not afraid to be a little funny in the way that a lot of horror movies can be to kind of break the tension. It has, it has a really wonderful Marvel, deep cut Marvel character that shows up that, you know, it's like one of those, I can't believe we're seeing a film version of this character. It's pretty wild. And there's enough about it that makes it very much worthwhile. I like that it's standalone, that they didn't go, hey, let's draw this out into six episodes or whatever. It's just a kind of a one-off cool Halloween thing that also very much could tie into a grander Marvel Cinematic Universe tapestry if they so choose. Definitely there are threads that can weave into, you know, the upcoming Blade movie or even Multiverse of Madness stuff. There's a character in this show that is very much tied to the multiverse. So who knows if this will have grander ramifications. It certainly doesn't need to. I think it's a really kind of fun, self-contained Halloween treat.
I really liked it as well, Jeff. For many of the reasons you described, it feels like a pretty big swing for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, very different than anything that's come before. We've seen very little black and white stuff in the MCU other than part of Thor Love and Thunder, for example. And there is a lot of hand-to-hand gory combat in this movie, which is also fairly atypical for Marvel. It's in black and white, so that helps with the ratings and make it not, you know, traumatizing to see people get cut in half or other bloody things or whatever. But I loved that it A, felt like a love letter to these kinds of monster movies. B, felt pretty standalone and you could watch it and enjoy it without seeing anything else MCU ever in your whole life. And C, like, just some pretty solid action throughout the movie as well. Short and sweet. It's done within the course of an hour.
Yeah.
There's very little to dislike in this movie, in my opinion. So
yeah,
I liked it. I liked it quite a lot.
And I agree.
Michael Giacchino can direct. That's another thing, you know, like he is one of the most talented composers alive today. He's written some of the most memorable themes of all time. I would say like his incredible score is a classic, like, and that is still something that many people use today. A lot of his music is used on TikTok all the time. It's remixed and part of memes and so on. So he is enormously talented as a composer. And now we know that he also has skills as a director. Of course, he also wrote the music for this movie. Can you imagine trying to be the composer for Werewolf by Night and not Michael Giacchino? That'd be pretty tall order. the music is great as well in this movie.
Yeah.
And all the performances are great. Some memorable characters. What is interesting to me, Jeff, is like we're not sure what time the movie takes place in. It's heavily indicated that this is kind of like in, you know, the 18, 1900s, but there's no like modern technology or anything like that in the movie.
I don't know. Is that, do you think that's true? I didn't catch that. There's sort of an intro sequence that's hand drawn.
Yeah,
that references the Avengers. And so I assumed that that was placing it in present day.
I see. Interesting. Okay. I did not catch it. Did not clock that. But yeah, it could easily be present day. It could easily be present day. So, but it's interesting. Like, you know, you don't see an iPhone in the movie or anything.
No.
Like that, right. So there's nothing that is done to place it in time. So I expect that at some point later on in the MCU, we're going to find out when it took place. But they've left themselves a lot of options with this, with how they structured it. So anyway, It's enjoyable. Check it out. It's Werewolf by Night. It's streaming right now on Disney Plus. I had a chance to check out Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. This is a movie that's now on Peacock. There's a bunch of like solid movies on Peacock these days. Like a lot of like Universal movies, you know, the Universal Comcast, like they end up putting a lot of their movies straight to like to streaming on Peacock. And so it's ending up being like a pretty good value if you want to watch movies like Vengeance is on there. I'm probably going to check that out, Jeff. I know you like that movie.
Yeah.
Though I probably won't like it, but
I suspect you'll hate it, but I still want you to watch it.
Yeah. So I'm planning to check that out. But yeah, it's streaming on Peacock. And so I saw Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul on Peacock. This is a movie that premiered at Sundance, I think, this year. And Devendra, I believe you watched it, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I did not see that.
Oh, you didn't. No. Got it. No. Okay. I think you might have mentioned it, or we talked about it around the time of Sundance. I really loved this movie. I think there is a fundamental misalignment between what people expected this movie to be and what it is, based on the reviews, which from my recollection were kind of mixed. This is a mockumentary style movie, and I think people were like, oh, this is going to be like The Office, but for, you know, mega churches, basically, right? Like, it's going to be making fun of mega churches. But it's really not that at all. It has a mockumentary style format, but I don't even know if it's a comedy, to be honest. There's like really funny moments in it, moments that are intended to be like very haha funny for sure. But I found it to be a very troubling look at modern Christianity and prosperity theology. It's based off of it's heavily inspired by a real life story of somebody who ran a mega church. And I just think it's a really impressive piece of work. As somebody who I grew up in the church, I recognize so much of what makes the modern church toxic and terrible in this film. And the performances are just incredible. Specifically, Regina Hall plays the wife of a pastor, a first lady, I think it's referred to, you know, the pastor of a mega church. And she just imbues that role with so much pathos and tragedy that she is kind of the MVP of this movie, in my opinion. Sterling K. Brown, also incredible in this movie. But I loved it. I would go into this looking for a trenchant takedown of the modern day church. Mm-hmm. I would not go in looking for a like haha goofy comedy. It is that way sometimes, but it's more disturbing and troubling than it is funny, I would say.
It sounds like a more serious version of The Righteous Gemstones, basically.
Yes, that's a great comparison, Devendra.
Yeah,
a more serious version of Righteous Gemstones, right? So it's Righteous Gemstones is I think a comedy, like a flat out comedy, right?
Straight up, yeah.
And obviously not told mockumentary style. Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. Mockumentary style, but also much more serious. Some funny moments, though. Great performances by Sterling K. Brown and Regina Hall. Worth watching for them alone. It's a satire. I will say that. It's a satire. It's not, but I don't know like how haha funny it is most of the time. But it's streaming right now on Peacock. I'd strongly recommend it. Check it out. It's Honk for Jesus. Save Your Soul. Jeff Cannata, hit us with some things you've been watching this week.
Well, I had a chance to go to an early screening of the new Cate Blanchett, Todd Field film, Tar, T-A-R, Tar. This is a fictional biopic. Well, that's not really the case. It's not really a biopic, but it's very much focused on one singular character, this phenom, this musical phenom, a maestro conductor, who has very clearly, they say explicitly at the beginning of the film, won the EGOT, has been an EGOT recipient. Such a prodigy, such a an incredible star in the film world that she, you know, had won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, and also, you know, conducts the Berlin Symphony. Much of the movie takes place in Berlin. This is a very long movie, 2 hours and 38 minutes. But I felt like it was 3 hours, man. It's long. And it's quite an amazing performance by Cate Blanchett. This movie is worth seeing for Cate Blanchett alone. She is extraordinary, extraordinary. In fact, I struggled to think of another actor who could have pulled this off with such aplomb. She is a singular, in my view, in her capacity to do this movie. It is an incredible movie. Like I said, long, it feels encyclopedic in its view of her and what the components of a life that this person would lead. I don't want to reveal where this movie goes, but it was very much different than I expected it to be. Knowing that it was Cate Blanchett, knowing she was playing a symphony conductor, I thought it was really going to be a movie about music. And it very much is not, in my view. Certainly music is at the center of the movie and it revolves around a life in music, but it really is much more about ego and what the effects of ego do to a person. And the excesses that one can succumb to when one is so successful, and in that view, it is it's striking, it's incredible. I mean, I have a few issues with it, honestly, but it is, the performance is staggering, and the way the movie is structured, where you see these tiny moments, you'll see a scene that doesn't even really seem to have a point to it. It's just a slice of a moment of this woman living her life, struggling with something, dealing with something, influenced by something. So the breadth of what was shot, the demands on Blanchett, she's in nearly every frame of the movie. It is her movie, 100%. And she is up to the task like I think no other. Very much worth seeing. It's great film acting. If she's not nominated for an Academy Award for this, I will be shocked. It is staggering what she brings to it. The like first 10 minutes of the movie, I was like, I'm in love with this movie. I love this movie. It very much departs from where it starts and goes to a really place I did not expect. But and my esteem of the movie went down slightly, but I still think this is one of the best movies of the year. Certainly worth seeing by anybody that enjoys dense, interesting, artful filmmaking. I mean, it really is a movie about the smartest person in the room and what that does to a person, or what it can do. I highly recommend Tar.
Fascinating. It's getting to that time of the year where every week or every other week there's a new movie that opens that expands your horizons for what cinema can be. And I feel like we're entering that season of the year, you know, award season, where everyone's trying to cram in all these movies before the end of the year. And Tar is definitely one of those movies that is on my list, and I've heard great things about it. And Jeff, your really positive review is probably going to get me to get out to the theater and watch the 3-hour version the 3 hours of this movie. So
it's amazing. I was really excited. Like, I want to see this in great sound, and everything's going to be amazing. She's going to be conducting. It's like an hour of this movie, zero music. Mm-hmm. It's wild. It's very much not what you expect. Yeah. You last an hour before you see her ever actually interact with the symphony, but it's so interesting in what it is bringing to the table.
Right. That movie, High Flying Bird, the Soderbergh movie that was, it was like about basketball, but there was like virtually no basketball in the entire film.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But I assume there's more music than zero in.
There's more than zero. There's definitely more than zero, but I really thought, wow, we're going to get to see Cate Blanchett, like, you know, conducting symphonies throughout this and it's gonna be all about me. And there is a little of that. But you wait a long time to get there. Mm-hmm. And,
Well, I'm looking forward to it regardless. But anyway, the movie's Tar. It's out in limited release right now, I believe. It's not playing anywhere near me yet.
I think it's only LA and New York at this moment.
Yeah. But hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Jeff, what else have you been watching this week?
Well, as I often do this week, I turned to my friends on Twitter with the #/tag. Where the listeners of this very podcast share their recommendations for what we should watch or what other listeners should watch. It's a fantastic tool that I turn to all the time when I'm like, I want to watch something new to talk about on the show. What are the listeners of the Filmcast recommending right now? And I will tell you, someone on Twitter, or a couple of people, recommended vociferously a movie called Vesper. a science fiction movie called Vesper, which cost me $7, and I made it through about 15 minutes of it. So I won't be talking about Vesper.
Wow. Also, like, if Jeff is plunking down $7,
yeah,
like, and then he doesn't finish the movie, that is very unlike, because Jeff is somebody who likes to get the most value for his money for movies.
Indeed. Indeed.
So the fact that you, I mean, okay, Jeff, you got to tell me at least why you didn't make it through the movie.
I don't want it to appear to be a value judgment on the movie, which I think in its first 15 minutes certainly convinced me that the production value and the idea of this movie were very powerful. It is extremely dark, extremely
upsetting.
There is a scene in the first 10 minutes that I was like, well, I can't watch this movie. Sorry, can't do it. Sorry. So I appreciate there are folks that specifically said, hey, Jeff, you got to see Vesper. I wish I had the stomach for it. This was a rough week for me in a lot of ways, family-wise, and there's just a scene toward that. I mean, there's a lot of really tough stuff at the beginning, and then there's one scene very much close to the beginning where I was like, yeah, if this is this movie, and it doesn't seem like it's getting any brighter from here, you know, I'm going to take my $7 and just call it a wash. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I hope one of you two sees this movie because I've heard it's very good and tell me, oh, you missed it because it gets really amazing later. Anyway, that's Vesper. So didn't want to talk about that. What I ended up doing after turning that off, I switched over to a different recommendation. This one comes from Aaron Pinkston on Twitter. Aaron Pinkston wrote, Jeff, #/ The Outfit, which is like a perfect Jeff Cannata movie, and it's now on Amazon Prime. And I went, perfect Jeff Cannata movie? Hey, I'm Jeff Cannata.
What?
Yeah. And I'm here to tell you, Aaron, you're right. It's a perfect Jeff Cannata movie. It's a perfect Jeff Cannata movie. The Outfit is a movie you probably wouldn't even know arrived on Amazon Prime. I certainly didn't see any ads for it. I had to find out through #/. This is a brand new film by writer-director Graham Moore. And it stars one of my favorite actors on the planet working today, Mark Rylance, who you've seen in almost every Spielberg movie over the last 8 years. But he's an old Shakespearean actor. He was in charge of the Old Globe for many, many years. Just brilliant. Brilliant. He's brilliant. I could watch him read the phone book.
Also, Bridge of Spies. I think he won an Oscar for that, right?
Indeed. Yeah. But Spielberg worked with him once, I think, and was like, he's going to be in all my movies.
Yeah.
Except West Side Story, because there's really no role for him in West Side Story.
He could have been Officer Krupke. Jeff.
He should have been Officer Krupke. That would have been amazing. That would have been amazing. Anyway, he's brilliant. I mean, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And very much the center of this movie. There's a movie about, so the reason it's a Jeff Cannata special is, you know, listeners of the show know that I love movies that are basically plays. A movie that is like takes place in one location, is just a bunch of people talking. Ah, it's my catnip. I love it. I love it. And that is The Outfit. In fact, I was shocked to discover that it wasn't based on a play. I thought, oh, this has got to be as I was watching it, I was like, I can't wait to see who wrote the play that this is based on, because it's obviously an adaptation of a stage play. No, turns out, no, it's an original film written by Graham Moore and Jonathan McClane, whose work I loved in Die Hard. No, never mind. John McClane? No? Okay.
I got it. I clocked it. Yeah.
Anyway, it is a single location. It takes place in the 50s, I think 1958, I want to say. And it takes place entirely inside a high-end suit shop, a men's clothier in Chicago in 1958. Mark Rylance plays the owner and proprietor of the shop. He's very quick to correct people who call him a tailor. He is not a tailor. He is a cutter. Evidently, a cutter is a much higher skill profession than a tailor. A tailor just takes measurements. A cutter creates the suits. So he is very much creating suits and then gets embroiled in this mob situation. The criminal criminal organization uses his shop as a place to sort of drop messages, and he makes suits for the head of this Irish crime family, and then gets swept up in this one night of danger. And it's awesome, man. It is if you like movies like this, like I do, where it's just actors in a room acting, tension, twists, reveals, fun stuff. Oh, it's great. And it's full of actors that I've never seen before, which is another reason why I thought, oh, this must be the original Broadway cast or something. The people that played this on stage, and they just used the actors and added Mark Rylance. No, it's just a bunch of actors that I was not familiar with, but all of them give really stellar performances. It's great. I think there may be one twist too many at the end for my taste. I think we could have been like, oh, well, I think we're fine now. But overall, very clever, very sharply written, and just beautifully performed. Rylance is so, so, so good to watch in this movie as this sort of soft-spoken craftsman who believes in the quality of his work above all. It's great. It's called The Outfit.
All right. I'm looking forward to this one, Jeff. I had seen this one pop up a while ago on like Video On Demand, and there's so many things on Video On Demand these days. It's really hard to sort the good from the bad. This is a Focus Features movie. They generally have good quality, and it's available right now on Prime Video. So it's free for people who have Prime. I'll try to check it out. It's called The Outfit, streaming right now on Prime Video.
I spent the entire time pretending that I'd spent the $7 on this movie instead. That's why it worked out.
Yeah, yeah. But now you've got me intrigued on Vesper too. You know, maybe I should watch that movie first.
Yes. For most people, deeply upsetting might be a turnoff. For Dave Chen, he's like, "Whoa, how quickly can we wrap up this podcast? I need to see this deeply upsetting movie."
Yeah, we'll see how you guys feel when we watch. Speak No Evil. That's the movie mess you all up.
Yeah. Speak No Evil is available right now on Shudder. It's a movie that Devendra has been recommending.
I don't know if the word is recommend, but certainly I've been threatening you with it.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm planning to check that out as well. So anyway, The Outfit, available on Prime Video, and Speak No Evil, available on Shudder. I'm hopefully going to check that out this week. I'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
But that is what we have been watching this week for the Filmcast. All right, let's get to weekly plugs. Weekly plugs is a part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I want to plug a conversation I had with Ashley Esqueda on the Decoding TV podcast. I believe you've done some hosting with her, Jeff Cannata.
Yes, right? 2 years. We did Tomorrow Daily. Ashley Esqueda and I did the show on CNET several years ago, and I think very highly of her. She's awesome. I don't know how you managed to talk her into hanging out with you.
Yes. Well, I said, if you want to chat with someone who Jeff Cannata despises... then Decoding TV is a great podcast for you. No, I'm just joking.
Does that work as a
no. Obviously she thinks highly of you as well. I had a great time talking with her on the Decoding TV podcast. We actually recently talked about Werewolf by Night. So check that out at podcast.decodingtv.com. And it was a really fun chat. But yeah, we've been covering shows like She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, and Andor, basically like a lot of Disney Plus shows on the Decoding TV podcast. So Werewolf by Night, interesting thing that pops up that we discussed with Ashley. Check it out at podcast.decodingtv.com. Devendra Hardwar, hit us with your weekly plug.
Oh, I just want to shout out the latest episode of the Engadget podcast, where we talked about the Pixel 7 and all the things Google announced last week. It's a bunch of cool new stuff. I'm not usually a fan of Google's hardware. You can listen to that episode to learn why. But I do think they're kind of like growing and maturing as a company right now. So even though they totally killed Stadia, and again, many, many reasons why we don't trust Google, it is cool to see like their design of like the watch and their phones and everything coming together. I point a lot of that to HTC, which they bought several years ago. And I'm looking at these devices like the evolution of HTC's like brilliant design from back in the day. So yeah, come check out our conversation on the Engadget podcast.
All right. And Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
My video game podcast, which is called DLC, we just recorded last night a new episode with Kyle Bossman, who is awesome. He does a show called Delayed Input. He's hilarious and insightful and great. If you've never listened to our video game pod or my video game podcast that I do with Christian Spicer, this would be a great episode to jump onto. I think it was highly entertaining, really, really interesting topics. We had a week of tons of video game news. We got to talk about the new Mario, Super Mario Brothers movie trailer, which, yes, I watched. I know I'm unsullied most of the time. I did watch that trailer because my son is obsessed with Super Mario Brothers. And
you don't want that plot spoiled for you, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we talked about that. There's lots of really great news. And Steam Next Fest was this weekend. We got to talk about all the crazy demos that I enjoyed. It's just a great episode. And it's episode 464 of the DLC podcast. You can find it at 5by5.tv/DLC. And it's with Kyle Bossman, who's fantastic.
Just out of curiosity, Jeff, now that you've watched the Mario trailer, like, what did you think of it? I know you cover it in that podcast as well, but I'm curious, you know, if you could give us the Cliff's Notes.
I think it's gorgeous. I first and foremost was very impressed with the visuals. I think, you know, they're clearly setting out to make a very entertaining family film, which I'm excited about. My son, as I said, is obsessed with Mario. It's his favorite thing in the world. I can't even express to you how much he is obsessed with Mario. Just studies it like I would study, you know, I don't know, something I study.
There are worse things to be obsessed about, you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So, you know, he's very, very excited about seeing the movie, very excited about the trailer. And I'm glad that they're making this, you know, this family film. For me, the thing it brings up is something that a drum I've been beating for many years now. And it's a shame to me that these movies have to be packed with A-list celebrity voice actors. If ever there was an IP that did not need that boost, it would be Mario. And, you know, there's a lot of backlash against Chris Pratt. I happen to generally like Chris Pratt on screen. I don't have a problem with him per se, but just the notion that we need to have big name, recognizable A-list actors in all of the roles in a Super Mario Brothers movie just seems unfortunate to me. I wish you could people it with or cast it with, you know, just great voice actors that whose names you never recognize. And you know, a lot has been made about the fact that Pratt doesn't sound like he's doing the Mario voice, but I'm like, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, you know, because like you cast Chris Pratt and he's like, "Hey, it's me, Mario." He's like, "Oh, well, that's overtly offensive on a certain level." Yeah, you know what I mean?
I think it's this kind of like, it's this perfect storm of events online, Jeff, where I feel like it's both Chris Pratt backlash coupled with Mario fandom that's like creating a perfect storm where like literally on my TikTok For You page, it's just video after video of people like annihilating Chris Pratt, like hating on him so heavily for this. Yeah. But I agree that it's basically, I agree with you. Do we want a whole movie where someone talks in that, you know, with that kind of voice? I don't think so.
That was never my Mario. My Mario was Lou Albano.
Right.
You know, yeah, like that's who I grew up with. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, my view is if I had the keys to the kingdom, the Mushroom Kingdom, I would, in making this movie, I would have had Mario basically be Gordon Freeman, right? Just not talk throughout the vast majority of the movie. I think that would have made, you can have all the other characters talk to him. And he doesn't have to talk. I think that's a better way to do it. But yeah, I mean, literally any other nationality, you have somebody talking in like this overtly stereotypical nonsense talk. Everyone is like aghast, but for some reason, because it's Mario, it's like, "No, you should talk like this." You know, it's unbelievably ridiculous. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But anyway,
so, you know, today is Columbus Day, so I do think we can have this. We can have this little Mario voice. Yeah,
I am curious what the reception to the movie is going to be. You know, I think that It's been a long time since there's been a Mario movie on the global stage, and
it's going to make $1 billion, dude.
Yeah,
I have no doubt. The Sonic movie crushed. No one gave a shit about Sonic before that movie. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Or after, even.
No, dude, that is patently false.
I know. I'm being facetious.
My kid and his peers, 6-year-olds, love Sonic the Hedgehog for no reason. There's been no Sonic game that's come out to capture their attention. It is literally just a character that they love for some reason. Mm-hmm. All the kids at school love Mario. This movie is going to destroy.
It's interesting to reflect on like how much more faithful this movie is going to be compared to the last live action Super Mario Brothers movie, right? Like that. What a sort of weird journey this property has gone on in terms of our cinematic landscape.
The culture has changed massively, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. To be more more accepting of something like what we're going to see with this movie is what you're saying, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't have to give you the millions of examples from, you know, MCU and all the other things of how, you know, stuff at the time that Super Mario Brothers movie came out, they're like, well, we have to change everything to make it for a movie audience.
Yes, yes.
And now it's like, well, we have to make it as authentic to the thing as possible for a movie audience. You know?
It's like the complete opposite now. Like, it needs to be as faithful as possible. And there's going to be massive backlash if it's not faithful.
Right.
You know? So, anyway, fascinating stuff. Check out Jeff Cannata's DLC podcast. I particularly like Jeff on the podcast, how I think you and Christian were really super fans of Stadia when it first came out. You're like, this thing's going to last forever. This is going to be amazing.
We really,
never trust
not
Google.
Since, getting Mousetrap wrong. Have I been?
have you led so many, who knows how many people bought Stadia because of Jeff Cannata's recommendation?
Yeah. Well, luckily Google's giving everybody's money back. So yeah,
unless
yeah.
you subscribed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That money's down the tubes. Yeah.
All right, Davinder, you're right. I do still feel guilty. Thank you.
Okay. Well, anyway, a couple of plugs for the podcast as well. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/filmpodcast, sign up for ad-free episodes and exclusive After Darks. Of course, we never want anyone to support the podcast if it in any way causes them financial hardship. You can always support us for free by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast, or a rating. Just takes a second. And of course, we always appreciate it if you share about the podcast on your social media. Share thefilmcast.com or youtube.com/filmcast. Really appreciate all the sharing that you can do. That does make a big difference as well. That's weekly plugs. Let's get to our review of Amsterdam.
Harold, I don't know what you think you're doing. Excuse me. Hello. Got a dead white man in a box. Not even a casket. Doesn't even have a top on it. In a pine box of old wood. Who do you think's gonna get in trouble here?
Do me a favor. Try to be optimistic.
You don't get here without things starting a long time ago.
Everywhere.
So, two soldiers and a nurse found ourselves in
Amsterdam.
You are listening to or watching the Filmcast. I'm David Chen here with Davinder Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. And we are about to dive into David O. Russell's newest film, Amsterdam. I'm going to quote from the plot summary on IMDb, quote, "In the 1930s, three friends witness a murder, are framed for it, and uncover one of the most outrageous plots in American history," end quote. Before we begin this review, I do think it's worth acknowledging that the writer-director of this movie is, by all accounts, not a very nice person. And has
a huge piece of shit. Yeah.
That has done things that many people would deem unforgivable and not worthy of any support whatsoever. I am not disputing any of that at all. I do think that it is interesting to me how, despite those things, which are well known in Hollywood, people continue to work with him. So, literally, some of the biggest stars alive today continue to work with him. And I was talking with my colleague Scott Mendelson about this, and one of the reasons is because there's very few people making movies like him, like Amsterdam, which are not based off of comic books or existing IP. They're targeted adults, and which can often garner awards for many of the performances involved. And it's certainly something that, you know, director David O. Russell's movies have done in the past. But that said, I totally understand if people don't want to support a movie like this because they don't want to support David O. Russell. My personal view on it is that movies are the result of the work of hundreds of people. And so I still think the movie like this one is worth considering despite that. But here's an open question. Is, given all that stuff I just said, is the movie actually good? Because if it's not good, then it's like, what are we even doing here? Devendra Hardwar, what do you think of Amsterdam?
Devendra Hardwar, what are we even doing here?
What are we even doing here?
You know, a question I ask myself in the theater is, what am I doing here? What is David O. Russell doing here? I found this movie to be like a perfectly fine romp at times, but it veers into weird territory. And I think by the end, it just like tries to tie everything up in a like very sentimental way, sort of like love solves everything. It's really what's important is, you know, the friends we made along the way, everybody, while unearthing, you know, dictatorial conspiracies in America. This movie feels really uneven. I like a lot of the people. I think the chemistry between, you know, Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, and John David Washington is fantastic. I just feel like this movie is all over the place. It is quirky, like so many of David O. Russell's movies, but it doesn't feel like very well targeted or well directed. It feels like he has a lot of ideas and nothing ever really quite gels. You know, the whole idea of calling it Amsterdam is because they had this wonderful time, these characters living together in Amsterdam. That a lot of that stuff just felt like student film, like B-roll type stuff. A lot of it felt like embarrassing what this movie is trying to do and trying really to force us to really, you know, understand this relationship because these people liked to, you know, experience art together and make art together in Amsterdam. I just find it really, really uneven. It wasn't boring. You know, like you have enough of these people in here where there's a lot of cool stuff going on. I think like the actual like intrigue of the plot is enough to like keep me interested. But I just feel like this is clearly lesser David O. Russell. And I can almost see like a better movie here. It just feels like he kind of gave up at the end. It's like a, you know, high schooler writing a report and you get to the final page and you're like, I don't know. Yada, yada, yada. In conclusion, let's go home. You know, it feels kind of a letdown in that respect.
I do think it's no coincidence that a movie whose message is about love and kindness doesn't really resonate or ring true from someone whose most notorious viral clip online is of him screaming at someone. You know, I'm referring to his I Heart Huckabee, you know, footage of him from I Heart Huckabees that went viral many years ago of him mistreating a cast member on Lily Tomlin, I believe, on that movie, right?
And the stories with him in Three Kings, you know, George Clooney and everything, like that has been the thing. It is funny though, like I genuinely like Silver Linings Playbook. You know, I think that's a really sweet and romantic movie. But again, coming from this guy, kind of hard to accept sometimes.
Right. It would make sense that it's like it doesn't quite ring true if like this is the messenger, you know, that's behind it. But Jeff Cannata, I am curious, what did you think of Amsterdam?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I think of Amsterdam is best summed up in the form of a limerick. A great cast gives you a head start when crafting a grand piece of art. But sometimes there are factors that make all these actors less than the sum of their parts. I basically agree with Devendra. I think I may have enjoyed it slightly more than it sounds like he did. I found the actual process of watching this movie to be pretty fun.
Sure. It is a
wild thing to have so much being thrown at you at any given time. Like literally, oh my gosh, that person's the, what, is that Timothy Oliphant with two lines in this movie? What's he doing? oh, that's a weird quirk. Well, that's, I'm trying to process that. There was a period after Quentin Tarantino broke out with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction where every movie, like all the characters had just weird, quirky affectations, right? Because that was a shortcut to interesting for most people, or that's what they took away from Tarantino's writing is like, hey, weird quirks. And it feels like every character in this movie has weird quirks and strange things you've literally never seen. I've never seen a character quite like that before. And it's just full of them and weird plot maneuvers. And it's just this, I don't want to say it's a train wreck because it's not a train wreck, but it's akin to watching something unfold before you that's just unraveling at the seams almost, or kind of fall. If, you know, it's like watching somebody bake a cake, but the cake is overflowing on the side, or, you know, this thing's, it's just too much. It can't hold together quite, but it's still fascinating to witness all of the strange pieces. Like I said in the limerick, this movie, some movies are more than the sum of their parts. This movie is almost exactly the sum of its parts. There's just all the parts are, there's so many parts and all of them are there and all of them are individually interesting. But I totally agree with Devendra that by the end, it's like, this is what we were leading up to? Like the big third act climax is this? It just seems so, I totally agree with Devendra's assessment where it just felt like at the end it was like, well, and also it all the yada, 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 we're done. And, but so I don't think it works necessarily. I don't think it's a success per se, but I certainly am glad I watched it and it had enough moments of real strangeness or interesting or introspection and like how a person works and what that must have been like at that time and that place that I got something out of the experience. And seeing all these incredible actors come on for a line or the centerpiece characters really create some interesting performances. There's enough in Amsterdam that I'm glad I watched it, but it's not a movie I'm going to go out and say, hey, you got to make time for this one. Yeah.
I basically agree with both of you. Wow. This is one time where we're like all pretty much in agreement on this one. To me, it felt like just really unfocused. It's a story of political intrigue with no intrigue. You know, you're not like, oh, what's happening? You know, the pacing is just, it feels like there is none. It feels like we're just like, hey, this is cool. You know, you're like walking into like an antique store. You're like, hey, this is kind of cool. Let's like look at this for a second.
Yeah.
What about that over there? Oh, hey, let's wander over here. Oh, this is kind of cool. You know, like there's no like narrative momentum driving you to the inevitable conclusion that we're heading towards. It's theoretically a whodunit, but like, there's no tension or stakes attached to that at all. It seems like we just completely forget about the whodunit story. I mean, I know it's part of the plot, but I'm not feeling when I'm watching a movie like, oh, I really care about who it is that's actually behind the crime necessarily, right? And it's just what an odd movie, I guess, is what I'd have to say. It's just a very strange experience watching a movie. I will say that John David Washington, Margot Robbie, and Christian Bale have pretty good chemistry together.
Yeah.
You know? And that does go a long way. They're basically kind of holding this whole movie together with their bare hands, as far as I could tell. And a lot of the ideas, obviously, that are brought up in the movie are interesting, you know? But to me, it feels like when you look at movies like Three Kings, you know, going all the way to American Hustle and then this, like, which are like that's like three works of historical fiction I just mentioned, right? And as you progress along the lines, it becomes more loose and shaggy. Like it seems like the filmmaker is caring less and less about the conventional things that would make for a satisfying storytelling and just kind of like just wants to explore the things that they want to explore without regard for things like conventional three-act structure or you know, suspense or tension. It's just like, hey, let's hang out with these people and oh, weird wild stuff might happen. And that's kind of what the experience of seeing the movie was.
Sort of like I Heart Huckabees too. Like that was a movie where I feel like it was just too smart for its own good and he does not know when to tell, like how to control his storytelling sometimes. So yeah.
It is not really anything like it. And I think in that sense it's kind of interesting as this strange artifact. You know, it's like, well, nobody makes movies like this. And it's so bizarre that I can't really take my eyes off it, right? I'm interested. I'm drawn in. I was riveted. I didn't feel like I wasn't looking at my watch, you know? But it also doesn't quite work as a singular piece.
I do think that the use of all these actors kind of works against it. Do you know what I mean? Because as a result of it, I'm never really lost in the story. It's more literally every other scene. There's like, oh, it's another famous person. It's Michael Shannon. It's Taylor Swift. It's Alessandro Nivola is here. You know, like all, like every
Michael Myers. Okay.
Michael Myers, like all every right. actor is like a famous person. And I actually do think it is a distraction. Like, I actually do think it hurts the storytelling because you're watching it and you're focused on like, who's the next famous person? Academy Award winner Rami Malek, isn't it? You know, yeah. Anya Taylor, Queen's Gambit, isn't it? You know, it's just like
Robert De Niro. Okay. Let's go.
Yeah. Here let's go. You know? And so, I never felt lost in the story. It did feel like kind of this cavalcade of famous people, instead. And I guess it does remind me of like some Wes Anderson movies in that way, where like there's a couple Wes Anderson movies that at their worst are kind of like, oh, it's just like we're seeing like a bunch of famous people do cameos. But like those movies to me feel much more finely calibrated. You know, those Wes Anderson movies to me feel like, even if it is a bunch of famous people, like they're going to use them thoughtfully and never in excess. Maybe the Royal Tenenbaums being the exception, but even that, you know, like,
yeah,
obviously, like, I don't know. I just thought the use of incredibly famous people worked against the movie because it's not like all the famous people are playing famous people in the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, which would be like maybe its own statement about fame if they went in that direction, but they didn't. So anyway,
I continue to be impressed by the work, the body of work of Margot Robbie. I think she's extraordinary. I mean, from like I, Tonya, this, like she's really proving that she can do the real commercial stuff, and then do these really fascinating roles that are kind of not against type, but you know, I think she's so beautiful and so you know, could really just get by on playing very commercial films. And she picks these really interesting projects and pushes herself and challenges herself. I don't know. I'm so impressed with her work in this and in other things. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. She's great in this movie. I think the trio are pretty great overall. But yeah, shall we do just a couple spoilers real quick?
Sure. Sure.
Here we go. Spoilers for Amsterdam coming up right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming?
No.
But you won't find it because, of course...
You're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret now.
You want to be fooled.
I will say that my wife was actually deeply moved by this movie. In a way that I definitely wasn't. And part of it was about the idea of Amsterdam, right? Like that's kind of what the movie's about. This idea of Amsterdam, it's that place where we're carefree, we're worry-free, we're just going off and doing our own thing. And how that kind of intersected with this main couple of Margot Robbie and John David Washington. Like that relationship felt like pretty authentic and real to me. Which is not what I can say for the Christian Bale Zoe Saldana relationship. Like that just felt really random to me and kind of a throwaway in the movie, but like I felt the John David Washington Margot Robbie connection. And at the very end of the movie, they're like, "Yeah, you guys can be together, but you're not going to go to Amsterdam. You're going to go one of those other countries that they don't even name." And it's because obviously we know that I believe World War II is ahead of them in the movie. And so it's like, it wouldn't be a happy ending for them to go to Amsterdam because like bad things happen there. So they go somewhere else. And this is this kind of dream that like, oh, and this black man and this white woman can like be together in this kind of like dream ideal. It's a sweet idea basically behind the concept of Amsterdam in the movie.
It is funny that the sort of success or you know, hero's journey leads us to, hey, we stop these people from becoming the Nazis for a little while. They definitely become Nazis and World War II definitely happens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's more like the overthrow of the U.S. government, which, hey, what a relevant thing to talk about right now. And it is kind of annoying that this movie doesn't even... That's the, like, one actual thing, you know, that...
That makes it topical, right? Yeah.
Well, that makes it topical, but also... All these characters were basically just created for this movie. You know, the one piece of history is that General De Niro's character was basically, they showed at the end of the movie, like, did go on TV talking about, like, being approached about this, like, capitalist plot to basically overthrow the government. And that was the thing. And is a thing we need to worry about right now in many ways. So would have been nice to focus a little more on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, I think the movie just shows a lot of lack of focus in general. But, you know, it's not like outside the total realm of possibility, right? Or it's not completely unreasonable to make a movie that deals with something like World War II, but it mm-hmm. still has a sad ending. Like another right. movie that comes to mind is Valkyrie, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I don't think my point is that it felt like it wasn't a sad ending. It felt like everybody. We stopped the Nazis for a couple years. You know?
We definitely delayed that thing from terrible thing from happening.
That's what it felt like. That was the victory that we were celebrating, is like putting off the inevitable from slightly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyway, Valkyrie, another like that movie comes to mind, which is about the plot to assassinate Hitler, which is like, you know, going into that movie that they didn't succeed, right?
Yeah.
If you know anything, spoiler for world history, but if you know anything about world history, Hitler was not assassinated. And so it just takes a lot of skill to generate tension around that plot. I mean, and the problem is this movie didn't generate any tension at all, from what I can tell, you know, like about anything.
Right. So maybe it just shrank from that notion because of that. Maybe it was just like, well, we're going to concentrate more on these characters. And
Right. Yeah. It's like people are already going to know that World War II happens and the Nazis rise and everything like that. So why even bother thinking about any of that? Let's just hang out and experience the vibes with these people.
I mean, I think that's basically what the movie does. Yeah. It's a strange thing to me, this climactic speech that De Niro gives to the Union. It just feels like it feels like such small stakes for everybody to be so worried about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The whole thing felt really weird. The whole way that the Union stuff was set up, and it was like, oh, it was this thing that was, I think it was already, he was going to throw this party anyway, if I recall correctly, right? And it's just like...
It's all, the entire thrust of this sprawling movie is get a guy to talk at your event.
It's like... Oh no, that one guy died. We need another guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really,
I will say, seeing Taylor Swift get assassinated was really the one big surprise in this movie for me.
Well, and how it shone.
Yeah, just right into, they're unsparing with
just
it.
Blump, blump.
Yeah, just right
I
into
love
it.
I thought that was such a great way. I mean, I say great, you know, dastardly way to do that, where you push the lady and they're like, I watched, did you see they did it? It's that guy. I was like, oh man, that's messed up.
Jeff picked up a lot of tips.
Because they're like, oh, they're kneeling down next to her because they care about her. And this dude's like, they're kneeling down because they did it. You know?
Yeah.
Also because he's black.
Yeah. It's, but that was one of the big kind of like shocking moments of the movie, was when she is. It's always nice when a movie can like shock you like that, you know? Did you guys have a favorite or least favorite cameo in this movie, I guess, is my question. Have any performances stick out to you? I thought Anya Taylor-Joy did a great job in the movie.
She's great.
You know, she's like playing this kind of really unhappy character married to Rami Malek, but also...
Well, she seems a little invested in the terrible plot. You know, I don't think she's necessarily unhappy. She feels like she's
unhappy with like Margot Robbie being there, and like that dynamic I thought was like kind of interesting. But any notable appearances for you? Because since there's like 30 people,
Rami Malek is fun. It's always fun to see him get really conspiratorial, because that gives me like major Mr. Robot vibes.
Yeah,
but also Timothy Oliphant, who shows up briefly in this movie, but I feel like his one thing is make me ugly.
Yeah,
just everyone else is beautiful. Make me ugly.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, why did you take this part?
It's just having fun.
Strange.
Yeah. He had a break between, you know, between Justifieds, Jeff, you know, like,
yeah,
there's a new Justified coming out and the old Justified ended. So he's like, hey, let's wrap this up. You know, let's, oh, you need me for 3 days of shooting? Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
So any other thoughts on Amsterdam? Shall we wrap it up there?
I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, it just takes you to strange places and you never really know where you're going or where you're headed. And usually I love that feeling. And I love that feeling here. You just, there's no destination. It turns out you're, you know, it's just a thing. Yeah. Fine.
Well, at the end of the day, it's impressive that everyone behind this movie made a movie.
All of Hollywood. Yeah.
All right, folks, let's wrap it up. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes courtesy of Tim McEwen at Varsity Blue. Check out his current band, The Midnight, as well. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker and YouTuber Kyle Corwith. And our weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross. This episode was edited by me, David Chen. Next week on the podcast, Halloween Ends. Halloween Ends.
Until we make another one.
Yeah.
I seem to recall, like, Jeff, you might like, I definitely didn't like the second one, Halloween
mm-hmm,
Kills.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff, I seem to recall vaguely, like, you were kind of positive on it. Am I remembering that correctly?
I seem to recall that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you were definitely much more, you're definitely easier on it than I was.
I think that's the case.
But I am very curious how this one's going to do. Like, the last one basically came out during COVID and also was released on Peacock at the same time. And this one is also going to be released on Peacock at the same time.
Yeah.
But I suspect very few people will watch it on Peacock. They're going to go into theater to see it. So I'm looking forward to checking it out. I'll just say also, before I even watch the movie, it's nice that we're getting like a trilogy that feels like a complete idea. Even if I don't like all the movies, it feels like it's like a complete idea of like, hey, they had a plan, Halloween Kills Ends, period, and we get to see all three movies. It's relatively rare these days to see something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's going to be our review next week, Halloween Ends. And you'll be able to hear it here on the Filmcast. Our After Dark this week is about Athena, patreon.com/filmpodcast to check it out. See you later.